It was 50 years ago Saturday when the Surgeon General issued the first federal report on the health hazards of smoking. That kicked off decades of public health campaigns. While smoking has gone down since then, over 40 million Americans still smoke, according to the Centers for Disease Control.
We've got a Wisconsin expert on smoking and health with us now to look at what worked, what didn't, and the current state of smoking prevention. Dr. Michael Fiore is professor of medicine at the University of Wisconsin. He's founder and director of the UW Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention. Dr. Fiore, welcome to the show.
Thanks for inviting me.
Well, how big a turning point was that 50 years ago when the Surgeon General came out with that report?
Well, there were a few public health events in modern times that rival it. When that report was released, it was shrouded in secrecy. There was grave concerns that it would impact financial markets and the stock market would drop. It was kept under lock and key in sealed containers. The reporters that were allowed to cover it had to be locked in and could not file their stories. And finally, they chose a Saturday for its release to minimize its impact economically. But the outcomes are just extraordinary. Back in 1964, when this report was released, almost 44% of adults smoked. Smoking was ubiquitous. It was accepted in virtually every corner of our society, and it was a common behavior. In contrast, when we look at smoking rates now, they've been cut more than in half. Only 18% of adults currently smoke. We have higher taxes. We have clean indoor air environments. Smoking is primarily a behavior of individuals with less resources, and we've made enormous progress. With all that said, it still is the leading preventable killer in our society. Almost 500,000 Americans are killed every year, about 7,000 here in Wisconsin. So while we've made enormous progress cutting the rates from about 44% to about 18% today, we still have to finish the job and eliminate the harms from tobacco addiction in our society.
Well, we'll spend most of our conversation picking a lot of what you just said apart. First of all, how did the culture change so much where, as you said, it was such a commonplace thing for people to smoke that bad news about smoking might affect the financial markets? How do we go from this casual acceptance of smoking to where we are today?
Well, there have been a variety of steps that have led to this result. A couple that I just highlight that probably had the biggest impact. When in 1988, the Surgeon General said that tobacco use is an addiction, it's not just a habit, then that really changed the way Americans thought about it. People think of habits as things we pick up or put down. When we start talking about something as a drug as addictive as heroin or cocaine for many people, it really puts it in a different category. Another enormously important event was a report in 1986 that said, when I smoke, I don't only harm myself, but I put those around me at risk. That secondhand smoke is a killer as well. That changed things, I think, as much as anything, because we no longer said it's a rights issue, but it's something that's harming people in their environment. We've done an enormous amount to protect kids from starting to smoke, although still we have adolescents who do so. And finally, there's been a development of a whole variety of counseling and medication treatments. We've recognized it as an addiction, as a chronic disease, and now we have medical treatments to help people who want to quit to do that successfully.
Let's follow the thread of keeping kids from starting smoking in the first place. How important an element has that been over the last 50 years, and how successful has that been?
Well, it's enormously important because if you're losing 500,000 of your smokers every year to diseases directly caused by that addiction, you need to get new recruits to replace them. And much of the tobacco industry's marketing has been directly devoted to enlisting children and getting them addicted to tobacco. Luckily, the public health campaign against that has been somewhat successful. Rates of smoking among high school kids have dropped quite substantially, particularly in the last two decades. So now when we talk to high school kids, about 15 to 17% of them report that they use cigarettes. Back in the 90s, even, only 20 years ago, about 30% said that they occasionally use cigarettes. So we've cut that back. Making the laws that prevent the sale of cigarettes enforced is a big part of it. There's a new movement, including something that in an article that we have written recently, that's considering increasing the rate of the age of smoking from 18 to 21. So that's a new idea. But we can't forget that the tobacco industry is there to fight for their product every step of the way. A big challenge right now for us is that little cigars, which if you look at a package of them, they're essentially identical to cigarettes, are being used to get around many of the regulations we have against cigarettes. Many of these are in bubble gum and cherry and fruit flavored, and many people think that the reason for that is to appeal and make it easy for kids to get addicted to these products. They go down easy, and thus, once they get addicted, the tobacco industry has them for the rest of their lives.
Mentioned earlier that over 40 million people still smoke after this five-decade effort to cut back on smoking. Why so many, do you think? I know the numbers have changed a lot in that direction, but still a lot of people.
Yeah, still a lot of people. And of course, we can't forget the devastating health outcomes. I mentioned earlier 500,000 Americans who die, 7,000 in our state. But you know, for most smokers, getting from life to death is a miserable existence. And for all of us who have loved ones with emphysema or heart disease or cancer caused by smoking, it really is a tragedy that virtually every family in Wisconsin has had to experience. So why do people continue to smoke? Pure and simple, they're addicted to a powerful drug. And that's why I think it's so important that those of us who are looking at smokers need to be sensitive to the fact that today 8 out of 10 of them tell us they want to quit, and they've tried at least once and have failed. And it's only because they're addicted to this product that they're unable to break free. New medical treatments are important. Increasing price is important because that discourages use. Ensuring that we enforce laws that protect kids, because if we can protect kids up until the age of 20 from ever starting, it's very low likelihood that they'll ever be a tobacco user. So the reason we have people continuing to smoke is they became addicted as children, they're addicted to a drug, and even though they want to quit, they're unable to break free. I should mention one last point about this. People who smoke today are not the same as those who smoked back in the 60s when almost 50% of people were smokers. Today, smoking is primarily concentrated among some of the least advantaged members of our society, the poor, those with mental illnesses and substance abuse issues, the least educated. And it's individuals who have other challenges in their lives that are often addicted to tobacco and still struggling to break free of that addiction.
We're talking with Dr. Michael Fiore about the 50th anniversary of the first Surgeon General's report on the health hazards of smoking.
And we want to hear from you. Have you quit smoking in the last 50 years? And what inspired you to quit? What challenges did you face? And what ultimately worked for you? What do you think has been the most effective anti-smoking public health effort? Call us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234 or email talk@wpr.org. We pick up our conversation now with Dr. Michael Fiore of the UW Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention, looking at 50 years of anti-smoking efforts since the Surgeon General's report in January of 1964.
And we want to hear from you. What do you think works when it comes to getting people to quit? If you're one of the 40 million plus Americans who still smoke, how did you get started and have you tried to quit? Call 800-642-1234 or email talk@WPR.org. We'll go to your stories in just a moment. But Dr. Fiore, before we do, you've touched on the point of cessation programs. How important are they and knowing what's out there for people to be able to quit?
Well, they're, I think, enormously important, particularly for individuals who are struggling with other challenges such as substance abuse or mental health diagnoses. Here's the good news. There are an enormous variety of evidence-based treatments that can help you to quit. Are they magic bullets? Will they automatically turn you into a non-smoker? No. But will they give you some science-based support in your efforts to quit? Without a question. I'm going to give just a couple examples. One, anybody in Wisconsin can get free counseling help by calling the free Wisconsin Tobacco Quit Line. The number is 1-800-QUIT-NOW. What you'll get is a live counselor who will help you to develop a quit plan and work with you every step of the way. We'll also send you 2 weeks of free over-the-counter nicotine patches, gum, or lozenges. All of that free. 1-800-QUIT-NOW. Over 200,000 Wisconsin residents have called. See your doctor because she can assist you in setting up a quit plan as well as some of the 7 FDA-approved medications. And finally, talk to a loved one or a friend who has already successfully quit because that social support can help. What we know is that if you keep on trying, you can successfully quit. And there are lots of resources now that we just didn't have a few years ago.
We have listeners, and they have stories, and Sam has one of them. Sam from Milwaukee is on the line. Hi.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. What's your story, Sam?
So I'm 20 years old now. I've been smoking since I was 11.
Wow.
Yeah.
How did you get started at age 11? Sorry, before you finish your story.
I just wanted to be a rebel without a cause.
Mm. So where are you now?
So now I've quit using e-cigs. They're an excellent product. I have a Halo e-cig, and that cuts out the majority of the extra garbage in cigarettes, and it's just nicotine, glycerin, and water vapor. And a flavoring, and you can buy the flavorings with different levels of nicotine in them. So I'm working on weaning myself off nicotine with that, and that as soon as I got one, I completely quit smoking.
Sam, congratulations and good luck as you finish up on the e-cigarette program. And Dr. Fiore, those e-cigarettes are a little controversial in the smoking cessation public health community, aren't they?
Yeah, well, the first thing I'd say is to Sam, boy, congratulations. What a success story. And, he represents most smokers, and that is more than half of them actually become addicted before the age of 16. Thus, this is a pediatric disease, a pediatric challenge. It's not something that people just pick up and drop on their own. So to the issue of e-cigarettes, I've never been a purist about how people quit. The goal is to get off combustible cigarettes, and he's achieved that, and more power to him. What I do say to patients who come and see us in our smoking cessation clinic here in UW is, we don't know a lot about e-cigarettes. We don't know the long-term effects of them. We don't know how effective they are in general for people who want to quit. We have a lot of other treatments, counseling, and medications that have been tested and have been successful. So we urge people to use the other treatments first, but if they say they want to use e-cigarettes, and what we tell them is use it as a substitute for cigarettes, not at the same time and end up being a dual user of two products maybe indefinitely. So We've got a lot of evidence-based treatments. We don't know a lot yet about e-cigarettes, but, you know, any way you can quit, more power to you.
Good luck to you, Sam. And we'll go to Judith now in Galena, Illinois. Hi, Judith.
Hi.
What's your story?
I'm now 73. I'm in private practice as a psychotherapist for 10 years. When I was 38, I was in a divorce situation and started smoking. Smoked about 7 years and was desperate to figure it out. I'm a psychiatric nurse at the time and decided to go for, I don't know what it's called officially. I created it. I just got a lot of pictures of dear people in extreme cancer of mouth and throat, and blew them up and put them all over my house, and checked in and stopped to the point where when I picked up a cigarette, I didn't stop immediately. I just watched it and then kept smoking. And then it got to the point where when I picked up a cigarette, I got nauseous. And now I don't believe in this kind of therapy, essentially.
Well, Judith, I want to jump in and get Dr. Fiore in here. It sounds like a kind of aversion therapy. Yeah. I'm not sure that that's going to work for everyone, but I guess it worked for Judith.
Yeah. There have actually been studies of aversion therapy as a strategy to help people to quit. And there's some evidence that it can be helpful. The problem is that for some individuals, it has a lot of side effects, like nausea and vomiting, and that by itself can be problematic. Again, as I said earlier, I'm not a purist about method. I've been doing this for 30 years now, and I've probably heard 1,000 different ways that people have succeeded. What I always come back to, though, is we have counseling approaches. We have 7 FDA-approved medications. We have physicians across Wisconsin who have been trained to help their patients. I'd go with those tried and true treatments first, but if they're not successful, whatever it takes. There's nothing that puts us at greater risk than smoking. We know that if you don't quit, you're going to rob yourself on average of 14 years of life. We know that you've got about a 50% chance of dying of a disease directly caused by your smoking, usually preceded by a long period of debilitation. So whatever it takes, give it a try. The good news is that most people who try are able to ultimately succeed, and I wish them all luck in doing so.
Thanks, Judith. We'll go now to Tom. He joins us from Viroqua. Hi there, Tom.
Yes, good afternoon. As a recovering nicotine addict, I'm very concerned about moves where people are trying to allow the use of e-cigarettes in public spaces where smoking is not allowed. The reason I say this is that although I have not had a cigarette in 40 years, I realize what an incredibly powerful drug this is. And even at this stage, the last thing that I need is to be in a fog of nicotine, reintroducing me to the powers of that very powerful drug. And I think this is a very, very dangerous social movement at this point.
Thanks for the call, Tom. Is there a concern, maybe the jury's not in, Dr. Fiore, about secondhand nicotine from e-cigarettes or even normal cigarettes, I guess?
Yeah, so I think the point is really well taken from a couple perspectives. One is that we've done a really good job in denormalizing smoking, in essence saying that it's not an acceptable behavior that should be encouraged, and it sure shouldn't be encouraged in indoor environments. I also would say that this issue of secondhand nicotine, there's not any science on it yet, but I think it's a real concern and the caller's not the first one to mention it as a possibility. That's why most public health experts are saying that the clean indoor air law that we have here in Wisconsin and in 30 states across America should apply to all of these products, including e-cigarettes. That's not to say that e-cigarettes are made illegal, but why not have the same regulations that apply to cigarettes apply to them, particularly in indoor environments? I think that's the prudent approach, given how little we know about them, including the downside of them.
We'll leave it there. Dr. Fiore, thank you so much for joining us today.
Happy to talk, and to everyone who successfully quit and those who want to, congratulations and good luck.
That was Dr. Michael Fiore. He's professor of medicine at the University of Wisconsin, founder and director of the UW Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention.